So, after some technical fixes, I'm pleased to present Sebastian Graf from Xantara, and he'll be talking about next-generation traffic engineering with Spring.
All right, so thanks a lot. So, as it was announced, we are talking about traffic engineering with Spring, or segment routing, as it has been called before. So as you can see in this, in the introductory slide, as the title or the subtitle is stating, it's an introduction and a live demo, which is actually not 100% correct, because we are going to do the introduction down here. And if you want to see the live demo, you can see it up at our booth upstairs. So we have a small demo topology built in our lab in Frankfurt to show this in action. So, if by the end of the presentation I could get some interest in you and you were interested in the topic, just come to our booth and let's talk about that. So when we talk about in this presentation about segment routing or Spring, we are talking about the MPLS version of Spring. So I do not want to deny that there's also an IP version 6 only solution, which is using IP version 6 on the data plane to use the same concepts. So we are talking about the MPLS version, also our demo is running the MPLS version, but the concepts are more or less also applicable to the IP version 6 version of segment routing. So, for those of you who are running an MPLS network nowadays, you probably knows that basically you have two choices nowadays if you want to exchange transport labels. So you can run LDP or you can RSVP traffic engineering to actually signal a path between your PE routers. So if you run LDP, it's kind of simple to configure and understand. It's a very simple protocol with less overhead. It's a very simple protocol from the architecture and also very simple from the way that the router or the routing engine has to deal with this. So you enable it, and it provides, if it works correctly, in any topology in your network and heavily relies on the IGP to actually make loop avoidance, best pass selection, and so on. So LDP out of itself is a quite dumb protocol. It just assigns a label to a prefix, then it's done. So it does not even worry if these labels will ever be used. If they make sense, it just assigns a label, and that's it. So therefore, it's easy to configure, but it has no traffic engineering capabilities. So alternatively, you may choose to run RSVP with traffic engineering extensions, which gives you a lot of possibilities for traffic engineering, but it places a lot of burden for the configuration part and also for the control plane part of your systems. And usually, you run into some kind of scalability problems at some point with RSVP, because you can see it here in a simplified version of a very simple network. You're having four edge routers, and you have one core router in the middle. You want to signal explicit paths between every PE routers. So you see it, every PE router has to take care about three label switch paths, whereas the device in the middle has to take care about all of them. So the device in the middle is the point where the scaling comes into play and where you can run into scalability problems. Now, as I mentioned, this is a very simple version. If you consider a real network with multiple PE routers in between, and maybe you want to run multiple label switch paths between the same pair of PE routers. Like, for example, you want to have one label switch path for customers who pay a lot of money. You want to use a very short path to the destination, and maybe you want to also use some underutilized links that have a longer distance, longer path, longer latency for customers that pay you less money. And this is possible, but you need to signal a label switch path for each of these traffic classes. And so the problem gets even worse with RSVP. So now, if you think about a new solution who is doing something as boring as a transport label for MPLS, but as at the first point is not a very interesting topic, obviously it has to do something better than the existing solutions. And this is where Spring comes into play. So Spring really wants to combine the best versions or the best aspects of both technologies. So Spring stands, as you can see, for source packet routing and networking, formerly known as segment routing. And the basic idea is that you treat links in your network as segments or as a collection of segments. So you can see here, like, there's an arbitrary path being made. There's a blue segment, a red segment, a green segment, both composed of a single link, and there's a yellow segment composed of multiple links. And the idea is now to actually stitch these together and form a label switch path end-to-end by adding these segments. So from the first point of view, you may say, "Okay, this somehow sounds similar to RSVP," and this is true. However, the way that you actually signal these kind of labels is totally different than with RSVP. So you don't have any explicit signalization of label information. You actually encode the list of segments that your packet should travel into the packet itself. So you create a kind of label stack, and each of the label stack, each of the entries in the label stack is actually standing for a certain instruction. And this instruction at the end can mean that the packet should be delivered to a certain service somewhere in the network. If you think about service chaining, you could implement the segment routing just by assigning a certain service to a certain label. You can have a certain context, an IGP-based forwarding context, or you can address a certain link or a certain router in the network. Now, the nice thing about segment routing or Spring for MPLS networks is you don't have to do any change in the forwarding plane of your routing devices. And this is usually a good thing, because changing something in the forwarding plane for the vendors is a quite heavy task. So in worst case, the ASIC that you have used in the past, is if you want to implement a new feature there, is not able to support it. So you have to wait to the new generation of ASIC of your vendor or of your OEM chip manufacturer. However, if you have a change that is just, or a new protocol which is just living in the control plane like Spring, then it's a much more easier task for your vendor, and it's much easier to introduce that. So this is basically what you do with Spring. So you have additional capabilities there. And we are going to highlight two of the ways that you can assign labels and can assign segments, and to show you how you can use it to actually perform OEM functionality in your network. So for the first point, Spring is meant to replace existing protocols like LDP and RSVP. And as such, it also has to do the same task that these protocols are doing. So first thing is, we need to somehow find a way, an easy way, a scalable way, to find a packet, a label switch pass from one end to the other end, to have a totally label switch pass between ingress and egress router. And this is what you actually assign or actually do with prefix or node segments. So as you can see here in the slide, we have a network of 8 routers. We have a router here on the right. And this router is then announcing a certain segment for itself. So it's saying, hey, I'm segment number 208. And if you drop a packet anywhere in your network for segment 208, this packet will automatically be delivered by the ECMP-aware shortest path to the egress node. So just what LDP is doing, if you just enable it, just make a full mesh of label switch paths. The other thing is the so-called adjacency segment. And in this case, you have a router, R5 in this case, who is assigning a label for traffic that is going to R4. And R4 will do a similar thing. So let's take a closer look at these two examples. So here's again the IGP prefix node segment. And if you're now saying, OK, R8 is identifying itself as the node with the segment 208, the question is, OK, how is he going to do this? Do we need another protocol for this? So do I need to go to my router and say router, Spring, whatever? Actually, we are just using extensions, or just edit extensions, to ISIS and OSPF, to the existing IGP routing protocols that we have anyway. Because let's face the truth, the thing that we need to do with segment routing is also quite simple. We just need to somehow exchange label information. And this label information need to be consistent. They need to be advertised within my IGP area. And this is exactly what our OSPF and ISIS protocols have been done for the past. If you take a look how these protocols are working, they're actually calculating a topology at the first place, make a shortest path calculation, and then at the last step, they're actually seeing, okay, what kind of prefixes are behind router 5, what kind of prefixes are behind router 2, and then at the end, your routing table and your forwarding information base falls out of this. And so in this case, segment routing makes use of these protocols, extends these protocols, and just adds another payload information to the existing ISIS or OSPF database. So you can see here, wherever I enter a packet with the label 208, wherever I put it to R3, R5, it will always head towards R8. You can see if it's actually on R1, R1 has the possibility to make ECMP, so it can load balance, for example, make flow-based load balancing between the two label switch paths, because the IGP is capable of doing this. So the IGP will tell, okay, I have two possibilities to reach this router, so I also can reach the segment 208 via two routers, if the link metrics are equal on all of these systems. Now, this is the thing that LDP is also doing for us. So let's take a look about the other thing, the segment, the adjacency segment. So in this case, as seen on the slide before, we also have a label that has been assigned by R5. And R5 is telling us, OK, if you send me a packet with label 524, I will send the packet on this single link to R4. So if we have multiple links between these routers, the router will assign a different label for each of the links. So if I want, I can address a certain link from wherever I am in the network by just putting the same label in there. Now, the difference between the node label that we have seen before is this here has local significance. So R5 decided to use this label, could use another one. Another router could use the very same label without an issue, would have totally different meaning, just as we know it from MPLS networks. With the prefix segment that we saw before, you saw the 208 is known to all of the routers, and all of the routers are reacting to this. So this is some kind of global MPLS label, which is something new in MPLS networks as opposed to the transport label. And we will take a look later on about how we can work with that, how this is different to this label. So for the moment, you can see we have two different kinds of segments, and we can now combine these two segments to create an arbitrary path in your network. So let's take a look at this example, and we can see that the router R1 wants to deliver a packet to router R8, and now I want to actually signal the network how the packet should be delivered to there. And here you can see an example how a path should be could be constructed. So on the red numbers, these are the prefix segments, which are identifying a path to a certain node, whereas the blue ones are the local adjacency segments that are identifying a certain link. And now I can combine these kind of segments into my packet and can so create an instruction. So the router R1 is pushing three MPLS labels, and the top one is considered first. So the packet arrives on R3. R3 sees, okay, this is 205, so it knows, okay, this packet needs to deliver to router 5, because this is the top label and this is the global label for R5. This is some kind of instruction, like forward it to R5. So if you have worked with RSVP, you consider this as some kind of loose explicit route object. Just get there to this device somehow, and then let's move on. As you can see, R3 has actually popped the upper label, the 205, which is also a mechanism very known. It's just penultimate top hopping. It's also possible with segment routing. And it's also configurable, usually, that you can decide on a router, do you want to run penultimate top hopping, or do you not want to run penultimate top hopping? So the alternative would be that we still have the 205 here. Then R5 would see, okay, this is a packet that is going to my prefix label. I will pop the outer label and check the next label. In this example, R3 has already popped the label, so R5 sees, okay, this is number 5244. This is a label assigned by R5, and it knows, okay, I need to send this to 204, which is R4, and R4 is then considering the next label, which is telling, okay, you somehow need to get to R8, which is, again, in this case, a 208. So the packet is being delivered via the shortest path from here on to R6, and then the end to R8. In this case, you can see R8 or R6 did not pop the outer MPLS header, the outer MPLS label, and so the packet was delivered to R8 with the label. So it looks like in this case R8 and R5 are a bit different configured, because R5 is instructing its neighbors, please do penultimate top hopping, whereas R8 wants to keep the label in place. But this is an optional stuff. So I will just talk about these global label mapping. This is a kind of breaking the MPLS architecture, because before it was always a truth that a transport label has only local significance. If you consider LDP, for example, LDP by nature, if in its basic version, just talks with the directly connected neighbors and also just knows the labels of its directly connected neighbors, which keeps the database small, but also has some drawbacks when you want to do stuff like remote LFA. We have to do an additional LDP session to make a pass on to a router which is beyond yourself. So actually, there are two possibilities now on somehow getting around this global loopback or global label assignment. So in the first try in the ITF, the idea was, okay, let's decide on a global space, on a well-known label space that all vendors use, and this we will be using for the node labels. So every vendor should agree on the same label space, and this will be used. Now, the problem turned out that before doing that, the first 16 MPLS labels from 0 to 15 were reserved labels, all with special meaning if they were assigned. Whereas everything with 16 and greater, the vendors could freely decide what to do with this. And at the end, it turned out that every vendor has somehow different sliced and partitioned the label space. So they couldn't really agree on the space that was being used. So if you take a look on the label assignments of your router, you usually see that a certain device, a certain vendor is assigning labels of a certain label space always to the same kind of service. For example, you signal a VPLS, label will always start with a certain value on a certain platform. If you signal a layer 3 VPN, the label base will always start at a certain range. And so they couldn't really agree on, and so they said, okay, so let's do workarounds for this. And actually the idea was, if we cannot make this unique, or this is one of possibilities, so one possibility is you have just one vendor in your network, and this single vendor decides on a certain label range to use for this prefix segment. And that's a kind of easy solution, because then you have the same kind of node labels on every device. Obviously, in this case, it's quite simple. So R1 and R2 have the same label block, so they start with label 100, same as R2. R1 gets the index number 1, which is then translated to the label 101. R2 gets the index 2, which translates to the MPLS label 102, and so on and so on. So obviously, this works nice if you have a single vendor network. Obviously, not every network in the world is a single vendor network. So therefore, there's another workaround. And the idea here is every node is actually advertising its label block. So in this case, R1 is advertising labels 100 to 199. And R2 is advertising label block 200 up to 299. The indexes are staying the same. So you still assign index 1 to router 1, index 2 to router 2, and then you're going to translate it. So for router 1, if you want to instruct router 1 to send a packet to router 2, you actually need to send a packet to R1 with the index 2, and this translates to the label 102. So you have an index and you have the label base. So let's just look at an example to make this clear. So here at the top, we have 5 routers, and we want to transmit a packet from left to right. So we know, okay, the packet needs to go to R8, and R8 has the node index 8. As you can see, every router is advertising its index. R1 has the index 1, R3 has the index 3, and so on. And you can see that these two routers have the same label block. The router R5 has a different label block, starting at 500, and R7 and R8 start at 200, just as R1 and R3. So could be multiple possibilities. Could be that R5 is a different vendor than the others, so it decided to use another label block. It could be that R5 has the possibility for the administrator to actually specify the label block, and for whatever reason you decided to change that. Or it could be that it is maybe a different software version of your vendor, and in the software version, the vendor decided to use another label block. So now R1 wants to send the packet to R8, and it knows that R3 is the next best hop for this. And so it got from R3 that it's using a label block from 200, and it transmits a packet with label 208, because this is index 8 of the label block starting at 200. The packet gets then delivered to R3. R3 knows, because of label 208, that it should go to R8. But it also knows that R5 is using a different label block, as you can see here. So it will swap the label to 508, so just a normal MPLS swap operation, like we are very used to it in LDP or RSVP-based networks. R5 then gets the packet with label 508. It knows, okay, it's index 8, because it's coming from my special label block, so it needs to go to R8. Next hop is R7, so I'm going to use the label base of R7 and transmit the packet to R7. And so the packet gets being delivered to R8. So here again, you can see it's penultimate hop hopping in use, but again, this is truly optional. Now what you see down below, because this is something like we are used to, we can see, okay, the label is changing at every hop, this is okay. At R2 now we can see what happens if we actually use a global label block, which is the same on all devices. And as you can see here, the label does not really change, because all devices are using the same label block starting at 200. So in this case, for every device, label 208 has the same meaning. Whereas in the upper example, the label 208 has the same meaning on R3 than label 508 for R5, because it's using the same index. So actually, when you take a look at a vendor, because this operation passed the MPLS packet on and do not change everything, was not really in use before. Therefore, what you typically see then in the FIP is that the router will tell you, okay, I'm going to swap the label to 208, even if it already comes in with 208. So this is some kind of pseudo-swap operation, but it's not really swapped. It's just being kept and being sent on. Now, if you take a look about what brings us this, so it has to be some advantages about this. You can see that we somehow encode the policy now in the packet header and no longer actually into the control plane. So you can get exactly the same path with RSVP, but with RSVP, you actually need to signal it end-to-end for your network, and you need to do this for all of your label switch paths where you want to do this kind of routing, which is putting some burden on your systems. Whereas in this case, you just pop a certain label stock on it and then let the network deliver it. So you could even decide for every packet a totally different path if this is meaningful or useful in this case, but you do not create any state in the network like RSVP. With RSVP, every label switch path in your core network is creating some state and your routers need to deal with that. This is not happening. You also get support for native equal cost multipaths because we're using the IGP as before. If the IGP is telling me, hey, you have two possibilities to send this the Spring packet or the Spring-based MPLS packet, you can just use both of the paths without any issue. There's no need for a certain certain command or certain functionality. We also saw that we most times only need a few labels to actually get a certain behavior. So you do not need to signal it end-to-end because sometimes it's like this, you have a plane A, you have a plane B, or you have a left and right on your ring, and you just want to say, okay, go left or go right, and that's it. So you do not need to signal the whole path. Sometimes it is even enough to signal the first two hops, and then the packet will just follow the same, the correct path via the routing protocol. So as we are on the SDN era, we somehow have to mention the controller, so that's the point where we mentioned it. So also with segment routing, you have the possibility to make some kind of centralized traffic engineering. So you have a central controller, which is learning your topology, for example, by connecting via BGP link state to your routers, learning the labels, learning the topology, and then you could push a certain label stack or label switch path down to your router, centralized. Or you can keep it as a distributed version and let the routers decide what to do or to configure it directly on the router or use a combination of both. Other thing, the labels are known throughout the whole IGP area. So because within an ISRS or OSPF area, every router has the same information in its database. And so it knows which labels the neighbor router is doing. And this has the advantage if you are doing remote LFA. If you're doing remote LFA with LDP, you have to make a targeted LDP session because maybe you cannot just swap your traffic to your neighbor because your neighbor is using you as a next hop. So you cannot just swap it. You need to wait for network convergence. So therefore, in the past, we did targeted LDP sessions to maybe the router behind to actually signal an additional label switch path and get around this, this looping problem. With Spring, you know which kind of labels you can actually use. You can, without any issue, install a backup path, even if the neighboring router is not using or is using you as the next hop to reach this destination. So you get it natively within the architecture. You do not need an additional signaling protocol for this. So, of course, when we talk about advantages, we also have to talk about the disadvantages. So one thing, of course, you have to keep in mind, if you put a label and another label and another label and another label, you actually increase the packet size. So now, as with MPLS, every label is 4 byte, so the increase or the overhead is not too big, but of course you have to consider it. If you are going to provide a certain MTU to your customers and you have a certain MTU on your core network, there's a certain boundary of what you can actually do with this technology. And this is something that you need to keep in mind. So if you take a look about how this can look, in an actual database. So this is an except from a Junos router, from the ISRS database, and the red parts are the ones that have actually been added with Spring, so stuff that is new, that has not been there before. So what we can see here at the bottom is the router is advertising its router ID, and here it's advertising its identifier, so its index. So in this case, this router has the index number 1. So the index is something that you configure on the router like you would configure a loopback address. Needs to be unique within your network, obviously, because otherwise you run into problems. But you assign it to a certain value, and then this router is identified as the router with the index 1. And then this router is advertising its base range. So in this case, it's telling, okay, my label range for the node segment starts at 80,000. So whenever a packet is being sent with a label to 80,001, this router knows, okay, the packet is going to me. I need to process this. If I want to send this router a packet that should go to the router with the index value 2, I use the label 80,002. So Here you can also see why it's no problem if you're using different label bases because you have different vendors, because you're just advertising them. And every router in your area knows about that and knows how to handle this. Additionally, we can see that this router has two neighbors, one on this one and here another one. And he has assigned a label to this neighbor. So whenever this router here gets a packet with this label value 200.792.299.792, it knows, okay, I should send this packet on this specific link to this specific neighbor. If I get a packet with a label with this value, I know, okay, I need to send it out to this interface to this neighbor. And this information is known throughout the area. So every router, every other router can use that information to engineer a path within your MPLS network. Now, this provides an interesting approach where there are some drafts and also some implementations also that you could use this for actually doing OAM. So with OAM, of course, you have the issue that you usually need to have a probe directly connected on the router. Because if you have a router with two links to another router and you want to test the data plane operation on these two, if you use pure IP routing, you cannot really decide which link to use because the router will decide it for you. Now with Spring, you can actually, with the use of these segment information and label information and the adjacency labels, you can actually redirect traffic to a certain path. And by this, also you can identify if there are problems on this link, if the packet is being lost somehow. And this is basically what we have set up. It's a quite simple quite simple architecture. We're having two systems with parallel links. We're having a traffic generator on both sides of the network. We have a third router, and this router has a probe connected. And now the probe needs to find out if there are problems on the link. So in this case, you can see there's an issue on the link above. So occasional packet drops, microburst, whatever reason there might be that there are packet loss. And now I can construct a packet on the probe, send this to this router, and then, for example, say, okay, I want the packet to go to the router in the upper left direction first, so this is the top label, and at the next, I want to send the packet to this link, and then I can even send it back again, and can it send back a few times. So you get the idea, but just constructing the label stack, I can also test the link multiple times. Obviously, you have to be aware about how often you do this, how much traffic to send is there, because it's some kind of Spring-based amplification attack, if you would like to call it like this. So you can use it to test this link, and then you can say at the very bottom of the label, okay, send the packet back to this device and send it back to my probe. If the packet comes back, you know, okay, it has been successfully transmitted. If it doesn't come back, you know that there's a problem on this link, and you can create another flow or another kind of packet, which is doing the same, but testing the link below, but just by using the other labels that routers have assigned to these kind of interfaces. And by this, you can find out from anywhere in your network which kind of links actually have problems. So verify the data plane operation of these kind of links. So if you want to have some further reading on this, as you can see here on the slides, most of the links actually are heading towards the IETF, because usually reading the RFCs and reading the draft is a nice idea to get used to a technology. There's one link which is not going to the IETF, it's going to SlideShare, and this is going to an interoperability report that has been presented by Orange at the MPLS World Congress in 2015 already. And what they did, they used early code of Juniper, Alcatel, and Cisco, or by that time Alcatel, and actually tested all the interoperability and also all the features that are running on these kind of devices. And they found out that actually most of the stuff was already working, already with the early software versions of all of the vendors. And actually, that made the guy who was presenting this from Orange set a message to the vendors like, hey, it's working great, please don't break it. Actually, now, as you can see, the first drafts are heading towards RFCs. We also have the first implementation. So the Junos code that we are running in our lab network on the three routers, it's not anymore any kind of early access Junos release. It's standard Junos release that every Juniper customer can get. So it's very easy to try it out and to actually test it and verify it. So I think we would have some time for questions, if there are any. Or otherwise, of course, you're invited to meet us at our booth and talk about that.
One question. You mentioned it's just control plane, but pushing labels, isn't that forwarding plane?
Yes, of course.
And but aren't there any limitations how much labels you can push?
Yeah, it's depending on which vendor you ask. Yeah, obviously you are right. So what I meant was the operation itself of pushing a label. This is nothing new. That has been done before. But of course, if I want to create a very long pass, existing platforms may have limitations about how much labels they can actually push. These limitations may be in the chipset, or the limitations may be in the software on the microcode running on the chipset. So that's true. Yeah, that's a limitation that you need to take care of or need to check.
Thank you.
I think there's a question. Can I, somebody have the microphone?
Not so much a question, but much more of a remark. What you can even do today without segment routing, if you don't want to introduce segment routing in a network, is to harvest the labels and then build packets with the labels that you want to run through in your network. Of course, it has some limitations because you cannot specify the links, you can only specify the nodes, but in theory, you could do similar things already without segment routing. And
yeah.
Stuff.
That's true, but you still need another protocol. So I think the nice thing about Spring or segment routing is usually if the industry introduces a new technology, they add another protocol. And actually, in this case, we are getting rid of old protocols and using less protocols, which I think is a good thing.
In fact, you don't need more protocols. You don't just need the existing protocols, but you need to, as I said, you need to harvest all the labels from the boxes so that you can build a stack, which is in that case much more elegant, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, in this case, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks a lot.